This is a special edition of the CBS World News Roundup. Katrina, a national disaster. I'm Dan Raviv. It's 1 week now since we realized that the levees and flood walls around New Orleans did not hold. Tuesday of last week, the water kept rising in the city, along with the devastation caused by the powerful winds and storm surge of Hurricane Katrina to the east in Mississippi and to a lesser extent in Alabama. Our nation faced a sudden crisis. We begin with an audio review, including President Bush, other officials, and members of our CBS News team along the Gulf of Mexico as rescue and reconstruction begin.
There's a lot of work to be done. And we're going to continue working with the local and state people to get it done.
The situation is stable as far as the levees are concerned. We are, in fact, now deliberately breaching some levees to move water back into Lake Pontchartrain. So we're beginning the process of dewatering the city.
We are now being told that the levees are being shored up. It seems as though progress is being made. I'm sure you've seen the video of the enormous sandbags that are being layered one on top of the next.
I'm Cammie McCormick at the Naval Air Station in Belchase, Louisiana. These Marines are using boats and helicopters to rescue flood victims. They found 12 people yesterday and expect to find more today. Some of these Marines just returned from Iraq, where they were part of the assault against insurgents in Fallujah. Others were in the midst of training for an Iraq deployment.
They suffered and they died, and it didn't have to happen.
The city is pretty much going to be non-existent for months because there's no electricity. The water has to be pumped out. Electricity has to be turned on. Water has to be brought forth to these people.
The arm of a big yellow track hoe reaches down and grabs a big piece of metal from a sign that used to tower over a furniture store. When the sign toppled down, it also took out a water main. The crew trying to fix the water main needs the sign moved out of the way before they could dig in and try and get the water running again.
I'm Peter King in Meridian, Mississippi. There are about 170 confirmed deaths in this state, but one official involved in the search for bodies says it could actually turn out to be much higher, maybe 4,000 to 5,000 people. Part of the difficulty is not just the debris, but when they find bodies, they can't always identify them because they've been exposed for a week or longer and have been rapidly decomposing in the heat. One county supervisor says that you can't tell sometimes if they're male or female, black or white.
There was no organization prior to the storm coming to ground as far as mobilizing assets, pre-positioning people, pre-positioning resources.
Thousands who left New Orleans came this way and stopped. They are now residents of Baton Rouge. Jessica Davis is here with her husband and six children. She's trying to limit any emotional trauma.
Mainly for the children, if not for anything else. We're just trying to get them back in school, trying not to keep them out of school too long. You know, they really need to get into some type of normality.
The water is being pumped back into the lake, and that is, we estimate, probably 30 to 80 days before we can get the water out of New Orleans.
We need to get this garbage off the street before it starts making people ill. We'll do it. We'll do it. Just give us the resources.
In the short term, officials say there will be no economy in the city of New Orleans and in the surrounding suburbs. More than 1 million people have left and are now looking for work elsewhere or sitting by elsewhere waiting for word on what to do.
The people are ready to come back. As a matter of fact, some of the last extractions we're doing, people don't want to leave. They know what they're saying. We're not giving up on our city.
Sitting in an RV in front of my house, water in the house, an awful, awful stench from the flooding. I'm faced with the task of tearing out my own carpeting, putting it by the curb. They tell us we have to empty the refrigerator. Oh, a god-awful smell is coming from it. They tell us don't put it by the curb because it'll attract packs of wild dogs that are roaming the area, as well as maggots, nutria, rats, and all other kinds of things we don't want. They say dig a hole in the backyard and bury all of the trash.
There's really no reason that here you are day eight into a disaster like this and you don't have people swarming in there in an organized fashion to do this.
All those smart business guys out there who will see how we have or have not done this right and have some fancy computer matrix, get down here and get some damn gas here and come down here and get their phones working.
Task at hand is the removal of the water, of course, and then get this transportation and communication infrastructure back to being restored. That's going to take time after we get the water out.
Duke Ellington called that number blues for New Orleans. What's it like now in the Big Easy? The water level is going down. The Army Corps of Engineers dropped sandbags to close up some of the gaps in broken levees. CBS News correspondent Harry Smith today heard from the mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin.
The next immediate step is continue rescue missions, seek and rescue, and then start to extract dead bodies. And we've taken some water samples. The water colorations are changing dramatically. I think there's some toxic waste in there, something going on. And we're going to figure that out and continue to drain and make the city safer.
You've said that you are concerned that there may be as many as how many dead here in New Orleans?
I said thousands. Some computer models said 10,000. I don't know what the number is, but it's going to be big and it's going to shock the nation.
Your people are now dispersed all over the United States. You have a quarter of a million in Texas alone. Do they come back? Does this city come back? I was sitting here this morning saying, you know, I really would like to go down and get a cafe au lait and a beignet, and I want to hear the sounds. I want to smell the food. I want to experience what it used to be like here. Will that happen again?
I think so. The city is unique in its structures, its history, but it's unique, more importantly, because of the people. They're saying, we're not giving up on our city. This city will recover, and it will be a better new New Orleans.
I've heard you on the radio crying last week. I heard you swearing.
Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
Maybe it's not time for the blame game, but something broke down.
It's much bigger than any one person, two people, or whatever. It's a process issue. It's a legal issue. It's a regulatory. The laws and the way we do things have evolved over time. And this type of catastrophic event requires quick action, and the bureaucracy did not allow that to happen.
Off the top of your head, streets clear of water, when the electricity is on, what's your best estimate?
Probably 3 weeks to clear the water, another couple of weeks to clear the debris, and 6 to 8 weeks to get the electricity going.
The mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin. Late last week, he was very angry at federal and state officials who gave news conferences, but he felt we're not rushing to send aid to victims of the hurricane. The mayor seems less angry now. When we come back, we'll hear of repair work in Mississippi and what President Bush had to say about possible federal failures. On this special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a national disaster.
There is a house in New Orleans.
This is a special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a national disaster. I'm Dan Revive. Yes, there are plenty of houses in New Orleans that are uninhabitable. At CBS radio affiliate WWL, Dave Cohen had a hellish week at work, and now at home.
Smashed ceramic roofing tiles shattered in the street, just like the lives of more than a million people here.
We have to go to Dallas because my husband's company is going to relocate us there, so I have to leave my home and my friends, and my normal life will never be the same.
Jackie Hoyt is one of my neighbors. She's been crying nearly nonstop, just like many of the people here. Her home actually escaped with relatively minor damage. What really upsets her is the fact that Katrina blew apart her relationships, her community, her future. She vows to come back eventually.
It's devastated Louisiana. It's devastated New Orleans, Metairie, all these small communities.
Next door, Dave Aldridge says he has put his guns away because he's afraid he might use them to take his own life.
About to go admit myself into a hospital because my nerves are rather shot at this point, tell you the truth.
His home is a total loss.
You know, it's going to be a complete rebuild without a doubt. Seems like that Katrina just sat above us and spun for a while.
While trying to work and report this story, I am also living it. I've been tearing out flooded carpeting and trying to get my home secured. I think it can be salvaged, but it'll take work. No power for more than a week. The mold is spreading. The house is rank, and with just an unbelievable, awful smell. It's a combination of fouled floodwaters, mold, and the contents of the refrigerator and freezer. Occasionally, we see a utility truck come by. A few people here flagging down the crews, asking when will the power be back on?
We don't have any idea. It's just tore up everywhere.
So everyone asks you, and unfortunately, you just don't know yet?
Don't have any idea. It's a mess.
Meanwhile, I am running generators to keep things going in a camper I have parked in my driveway. In the end, the biggest question now is, who will return to rebuild this place? Many have said that they want to come back but don't know if they can. Others have no plans to ever live here again.
I look forward to coming back. I really do.
You're hopeful you will get to come back?
I'm hopeful I will get to come back.
Think your neighbors will be back?
I hope so. I hope so. Some will, some won't.
So as they try to pick up the pieces of their shattered lives, people are making life-changing decisions in the coming days that will forever change the New Orleans community. To try and get just a small taste of that community as I sit outside of my wind-damaged, flooded home, I hosted all of my fellow reporters and some local officials for a Labor Day barbecue. We brought food in from Baton Rouge an hour away. I picked the toppled fence up off of my barbecue pit in the backyard, and I fired it up. We had chicken and sausage, chips and beer. For a few minutes, we escaped from the hell around us and enjoy just being together in this great, great city. Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
Let's not forget Mississippi. Terrible devastation there. Also many deaths. In Biloxi, CBS News correspondent Cynthia Bowers found people who feel neglected.
I'm going to say it. New Orleans is not the only bad area.
And the pain here is deep. The death toll now tops 160 and continues to climb. Families that escape death now struggle to survive day-to-day life. Hospitals are now seeing a surge in secondary illnesses, like dysentery, that crop up when simple things like drinking water become hazardous to your health.
This place used to be a shelter. What happened?
We had some problems with children and some adults where they were running fevers, nausea, and some diarrhea, so they were taken to the hospital.
330 in all, families who'd lost everything seeking shelter again, this time from disease rather than devastation.
That report by CBS News correspondent Cynthia Bowers in Biloxi, Mississippi. Nearby in Gulfport, CBS News correspondent Lee Frank. You have been to hell and back. I understand the power's back on in at least part of Gulfport.
And by Sunday, they're hoping to have the power on for all of this Gulf Coast area. In fact, all of the Mississippi people who have homes and businesses that can handle all of the electricity, they should have it by the weekend. Power workers have come here from all over the country, thousands of them, replacing many, many miles of downed lines and thousands of telephone or utility poles that were knocked down. They've done a great job bringing back the power.
And for those who remember Hurricane Camille in 1969 and usually say that was the worst imaginable storm, this was worse?
That was certainly the benchmark, and many, many people who survived that storm say this was much worse because of the widespread damage and how far inland it came. Also realize that the Gulf Coast has built up so much since 1969, about 10 casino barges on the coast, many big hotels that wouldn't look out of place in Atlantic City or Las Vegas. It's a very developed area, 250,000 people around here, and there were more people in the path of the hurricane. And I also think that some people over the years had become a bit complacent, thinking that, well, I survived Camille, I can survive this one. And I talked to a woman whose husband died, and she said he thought he could make it.
CBS's Lee Frank in Gulfport, Mississippi. At the White House, reporters keep asking President Bush about federal failures last week.
What I intend to do is lead a investigation to find out what went right and what went wrong. And the reason it's important is that we still live in an unsettled world. We want to make sure that we can respond properly if there's a WMD attack or another major storm.
President Bush at the White House on Tuesday morning. We turn to CBS News White House correspondent Mark Knoller. Is President Bush trying to avoid what some members of Congress are talking about, the need for a Katrina commission?
There's no doubt about it that he doesn't want an investigation going on now. He wants to be seen thoroughly and decidedly engaged in responding to the ongoing crisis along the Gulf Coast. He doesn't want to talk about what happened, what went wrong. He's promising there will be an investigation, but he doesn't want one now.
And what's the sense around the White House of this being a test of the man and his administration 4 years after 9/11?
There's no question the White House is worried that this is reflecting badly on the administration. It's the reason why every event Mr. Bush did during the day, starting with a cabinet meeting, a meeting with charitable organizations, a meeting with his education secretary, and then with congressional leaders, was designed to show him thoroughly engaged in focusing on what's going on in the Gulf Coast.
And late in the day, we learned that the $10 billion approved by Congress last week is only the beginning.
Well, the White House made clear that it was only going to be a down payment, that billions more were going to be needed. And one source now is saying $40 billion more is what is needed. And that still won't be enough to respond completely and thoroughly to the relief and recovery efforts.
At the White House, CBS News correspondent Mark Noller. Thank you, Mark.
You bet.
This is a special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a National Disaster. I'm Dan Raviv. The music is by the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, among the famous sights and sounds of the French Quarter in New Orleans. In happier days, of course, but hurricane damage was not too bad in that part of the city, but terrible in the areas most below sea level. And just outside the city limits to the west, Jefferson Parish, Aaron Broussard is the president of the parish. In public, at least, he may be the angriest Louisiana elected official on TV and radio. Aaron Broussard, about his first meeting, it was Monday, with federal workers from FEMA. What did he say to them?
Listen, I got a lot to tell you about what happened the last couple of days. But I got people who are starving in their homes, and my list is getting bigger and bigger, and my resources are burnt out. I said, well, let's shake hands and let somebody else sort out fault of yesterday, and let's begin today to save lives that are still hoping against hope that somebody's out there. Bureaucracy has murdered people in the greater New Orleans area, and bureaucracy needs to stand trial before Congress today. So I'm asking Congress, please investigate this now. Take whatever idiot they have at the top of whatever agency. Give me a better idiot. You know, give me a caring idiot. Give me a sensitive idiot. Just don't give me the same idiot.
Aaron Broussard, the elected leader of Jefferson Parish, just outside New Orleans. And to the southeast of the city, the Louisiana parish called Plaquemine, mostly a peninsula, was swamped. CBS News correspondent Byron Pitts went there.
Plaquemine didn't get nothing.
Jeff Edgecombe and Byron Prest, like all their neighbors, lost everything they own.
What's the deal to your heart to see all this devastation?
What does it, my heart? I'll be honest with you, I'm 42 years old, and we lost it a few times. Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, there's not one grown man can say he didn't cry over this one.
7 days of crying and cursing. Both men say they've yet to see a single representative from FEMA, except when they and their families were kicked out of the hotel they fled to in Baton Rouge. A FEMA team, it seems, needed hotel space.
When you got 80, 90-year-old women that don't have nothing, you know, they did have a motel room, but yet they pushed out in the street, you know.
By FEMA?
Yeah.
They laid in a wheelchair, kicked out of the hotel, put her in the car, and sent on our way.
So the men of Plaquemine clear their own debris, look for their own dead.
There are houses here leveled to the ground and some pushed into the street. As bad as it is here in this part of Plaquemine Parish, go further south and it's worse, where their entire towns now only reachable by air or by boat.
These were once fishing communities, crawfish to oysters. That stench in the air isn't simply dead animals, but lost livelihoods.
I got here me souvenir. That'll keep me from crying. I can hold on to it.
That souvenir is a brick from what's left of Jay Friedman's home.
Catastrophic. Take that word and think about what it means, and this is what it means. You're looking at it. Can't get no worse.
And it won't get any better, Friedman says, unless federal help shows up soon.
CBS's Byron Pitts, southeast of New Orleans. Let's cross the border into Mississippi, well away from the Gulf of Mexico. CBS News correspondent Peter King has been with people who had to flee their homes close to the water. They headed north.
Dan, several thousand evacuees came here to Meridian and found that this small city has a big, big heart. Keep in mind that when people left the coast, many could only grab the bare essentials.
Towels, blankets, canned food, forgot
the can opener.
About 400 evacuees have been living at a Red Cross shelter in the Central United Methodist Church. It's just off Meridian's main street. Shelter director Don Neese says local businesses donated so many essentials.
Toothbrushes, toothpaste, clothes, you name it, we're getting it.
They had to turn a meeting and classroom into an overflow room for all the supplies. Sharon Futch was among those cooking for 400 plus. Three times a day.
Tonight we're having chicken nuggets, peas, corn, rolls, and sweet tea.
Sometimes food's been hard to come by, but Sharon says she's never lost faith. One day last week, the school system called her. They had no power to keep their food supply fresh, and they asked if the shelter could use hundreds of pounds of meat and other goods. And then...
Last night I prayed for meat and bread, and today we had hamburger patties show up and hamburger buns, and we had those for lunch.
There have been scores, maybe hundreds of random acts of kindness here in Meridian. Pat Volker's crumpler left Biloxi and says that her car broke down about 25 miles short of here. She says a perfect stranger stopped to help.
They towed us in for nothing. They took our dog to the kennels. They took their car to the, it's being worked on right now. The moment we walked in the door, these people have done nothing but help us. And no matter what it is, whether they're kids, whether they're parents, they're helping either here or they're helping whatever it is you need. Couldn't have broke down. I mean, this was the best place in the world if I had to break down.
Let's follow up with CBS News correspondent Peter King. Some of those people you spoke with, they seem to be running, well, not so much on human energy, but human emotion. Does that get in the way of all the work that needs to be done?
Well, if anything, Dan, it seems to fuel the work that needs to be done. The folks who've been working at the shelters and really all kinds of businesses around this town have seen the haves and the have-nots. The haves pretty much live here. The have-nots pretty much came here, and they're doing everything they possibly can to help and make them feel better.
What else is going on around Meridian, Mississippi?
Well, we have the Meridian Naval Air Station, which is here, and there is a big tarmac out there, which is usually filled with jets. Right now, it is filled with tractor-trailers, big rigs coming in and out of there being inventoried. It's a FEMA staging area. They're doing the inventories and trying to turn around those trucks within about a half hour to an hour to get the supplies to people who need them further south. Also out there, they are setting up a hospital of sorts. It's a contingency hospital for non-critical care patients, but, you know, overflow from hospitals that can't handle them right now.
A lot of bodies will be found along the Mississippi coast, but there are injured people. There are people with a lot of work to do to repair their houses. Is there any place, say, Laurel, Mississippi, that we just haven't been hearing about?
Yeah, there are a lot of Laurel, Mississippi's. That happens to be a town about 50 miles south of Meridian, and it seems like every other house there has a tree smashed through the roof or has been flattened. I was down there earlier this week where they've gotten very, very little in the way of aid, food, ice, water, those kinds of things. Not until really the past couple of days. Finally, help is starting to get to some of those small towns.
Peter, you've seen it before after a disaster, there are so many acts of kindness by people. Southern Hospitality is not dead.
Not by a long shot. As a matter of fact, the hotel manager where I'm staying here in Meridian, you want to talk about Southern Hospitality. On Sunday night, she brought in a home-cooked Southern dinner for the 200 or 300 guests who were staying here. It was something that I think she just did out of her own pocket and worked a couple of days off to make sure that it happened. And those kinds of things, they seem to be typical around this town.
CBS News correspondent Peter King in Meridian, Mississippi. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you, Dan.
I'm Dan Revive. We're hearing about calamity and kindness, part of this special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a national disaster.
If you live like Jesus told you.
On this special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a national disaster, let's consider the role of religion. I'm Dan Revive. It's a question many ask after a major calamity. How could the Almighty let this happen? We return to New Orleans and CBS News correspondent Lee Cowan.
We've heard it over and over again in this storm-ravaged city. We hope to go to heaven, they say, because we've certainly seen hell.
People are calling, oh Lord, where the Lord is, Jesus, Jesus. And I tell them that Jesus doesn't work here anymore.
There are times it would be pretty hard to argue that New Orleans had not been forsaken. The almost biblical proportions of this disaster are impossible to ignore.
Whatever you believe, whether the storm was the result of fate or demons or just plain bad luck,
faith has found a following here. Certainly it was tested. Why wouldn't it be tested? But New Orleans has always been a city of spirit, and not just the kind that comes out of a bottle.
We don't have nothing.
We found Stacy Royal looking for help at the New Orleans airport, where departure lounges are littered with despair. Here, pastors wear bright orange t-shirts. In addition to everything Stacy lost, she almost lost her faith, too.
At one time, I had to question God, you know, but I knew that he would make a way, and I did get out. Me and my family did get out.
If we wanted to, we could sit here all day and just throw a little, kind of depress ourselves, focusing on the negative stuff. So I like to try to turn the corner and say, hey, man, we're alive.
We gather together.
Those who could came together in churches, but so many of the churches are gone. In the ones still standing, there were a few still kneeling, waiting for the answer to the one question everyone is asking. Why?
Perhaps this is God's way of stripping us of many things to allow us to realize what is truly important.
Looking for the divine in the midst of so much destruction.
CBS's Lee Cowan in New Orleans. Let's consider the political side of Hurricane Katrina and the flood disaster that followed. CBS News White House correspondent Peter Mayer, is there a sense, maybe even among people who usually support President Bush, that in the first day or two or three, he blew it?
Well, I think that's right on the money, Dan. You know, the White House keeps talking about two words. The president keeps saying them over and over and over again. Blame game, making it sound like all the criticism has been partisan, but it has been strikingly bipartisan. You've heard former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, and other Republicans questioning the administration's initial response. Now, Senator Susan Collins, who will chair Senate hearings into that response, promises very hard questions. She already wants to know how one major area of the country, the Gulf Coast, was so ill-prepared to respond to a catastrophe 4 years and, as she put it, billions of dollars after 9/11. So, Dan, to answer your question, there are going to be more questions asked about a delay in response and, frankly, why the president stayed at his ranch and even took a side trip to California in the opening hours of the Gulf Coast disaster. The top Democrat on that Senate investigating committee, Joseph Lieberman, referred to the nightmare that Katrina caused and exposed.
One of the leading newspapers in Louisiana, the Times-Picayune, is specifically saying that Michael Brown, the head of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, should be fired, as well as other officials. But the president seems, well, true to the usual George W. Bush, very loyal to one of his underlings, in this case to Brown.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. That's what the president said during his first trip down to the disaster zone. And he did not respond directly today when he was asked if anyone on the president's disaster response team should be replaced. But FEMA Director Brown, by decision or perhaps by chance, was kept out of camera range. Brown has become a target of criticism, a real lightning rod. In all fairness, his agency has seen a series of funding cuts, not to mention the fact that under the Bush administration's Homeland Security overhaul, FEMA has lost its independent status in the government. It's been folded into the Department of Homeland Security. Now, before Katrina hit, a number of outside emergency experts had urged the administration to keep the natural disaster focus in mind, that it's not all terrorism, as preoccupied as we all must be about what happened on 9/11.
Valuable insights from CBS News White House correspondent Peter Mayer. Thank you, Peter.
All right, Dan.
The federal government gives us these numbers showing how big this project is, how many troops on duty in the hurricane zone. 58,000. About 80% of them are National Guard, plus 4,000 Coast Guard personnel and 7,000 FEMA staff. How many military meal packets, known as MREs, have been given out? 11.3 million. How many Americans are now housed in shelters? 182,000. How many people were rescued by helicopters and boats? About 32,000. More than a week after the hurricane, almost 1 million customers have no electricity. In New Orleans, CBS News correspondent Cammy McCormick tells of one woman's ordeal.
Tens of thousands of hurricane victims still in this region are finding it hard to explain, even to those trained to help them, how catastrophic this storm was. Maureen Perkins lived in Chalmette in St. Bernard Parish. She tells a frustrating story of trying to apply for federal aid.
We registered immediately with FEMA. When I called FEMA on the second day out,
FEMA told me, well, we have to have an address for you. I said, ma'am, I don't have an address. And she said, well, hold on. And she came back and she says, oh, they're going to hold your mail at the post office. I told her, ma'am, they have no post office. There's nothing left. So FEMA took my cell phone number, and cell phones are out of commission, out of anything. And somehow FEMA did get in touch with me, and FEMA said they had my claim and that they needed to get my signature, and they wanted my fax number. I had been standing in a field in the sun for 5 hours waiting in line to see if we could get an advance on our homeowners from Allstate, and he needed my fax number. I told him, I don't have a fax number. I don't have a house. I don't have a car. I don't have a job. And he said, well, okay, give me your email address, and I'll email everything to you. I said, mister, how can you not understand what we're saying? We have nothing. He said, well, you said you're in line at Allstate. Give me Allstate's number, and I'll fax it to Allstate. I said, there's a four-block line standing in 100-degree heat. There is no number for Allstate. We're in a big open field. What are people going to do? People don't have fax numbers and emails. How can the federal government not know? Total devastation.
The 55-year-old Perkins has now survived Hurricanes Betsy and Katrina and doesn't plan to ever return to St. Bernard Parish. Cammy McCormick, CBS News, New Orleans.
Up next, some people are wonderfully generous. Others wonder, is our country prepared for calamities? Stay with us, please, on this special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a National Disaster. This is a special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a National Disaster. I'm Dan Raviv. Those are some of the sounds of Mardi Gras, the raucous street festival in New Orleans every year. The next Mardi Gras will be February 28th. One of the parade planners says there will be some music, drinking, and, well, you know, because he says now more than ever, we need a reason to celebrate. For some survival stories from New Orleans, maybe just seeing a little light at the end of a water-filled tunnel. How about some of the conversations CBS's Steve Futterman has had?
Miles, James Miles. Well, we're blessed. Yes, we are.
Everyone you see here in New Orleans has a story to tell. It doesn't matter if they are rich or poor, black or white. Everyone who went through Katrina has something to say. The first people I met were James Miles and his wife. They are poor. They had no way to leave New Orleans, so they just stayed.
We had a whole lot of rain and very strong winds. We felt 160-mile-an-hour winds. We also had trees and wirings flying around in the area, so much debris. But we stood inside and we prayed, and we made it. So far, so good. Thank God for that. Since the hurricane, there's a lot of murders has occurred, rapes, much burglaries, vandalism. Look, you name it. I mean, the crime rate has really arose very high, but we were fortunate enough to be blessed, whereas we didn't have to be harmed, and we're grateful for that, you know?
This woman stayed in her house, watched the floodwaters rise and get higher and higher. She and her daughter stayed in their home for 5 days until they were rescued by sheriff's deputies in small motorized boats.
How do you feel being rescued?
I feel fine. I feel real fine. I just want to know where I go from here. Nobody wouldn't rescue us until the day everybody passed us up. Nobody wouldn't help us out or nothing until the sheriff people came.
When people were going by, were you saying, help me, help me?
Yeah, I even had a sign say, help me, help me. Nobody helped me.
How were you getting by the last few days?
Barely making it because we ran out of water. We had a little water. We ran out of food. So you might as well say we just about ran out of everything. So we lucky.
One of the big issues facing New Orleans during the next few days and weeks will be what to do with people who do not want to leave. I spoke with the mayor, Ray Nagin.
They're going to have to leave.
So people will be forcibly removed if they refuse?
Well, I think they're going to be convinced. The troops are going to convince them to move because it's really not safe. And I know the spirit of New Orleanians. They said, look, the water's going to go down, we'll recover. I'll figure out a way to make this work. But this is like nothing that has ever happened in the world.
But we found people who say, no way. There is no way they plan to leave New Orleans. This man lives in the French Quarter with his dog.
No, legally they can't force us to leave.
And will you leave?
No, I will not leave. This is my home. I'm not a burden to anyone here. I'm not a burden even to my own mayor. If I go someplace to a relative or a cousin or friends, I become a burden. I am not a burden here. As long as I can get some food and some water, I'm fine.
As for the future of New Orleans, these are the thoughts of the man I first met when I arrived in the city, James Miles.
New Orleans is a city that never dies. Thank God for that, huh, bruh? We always have something that will bring us back up, so we shall rise again.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, New Orleans.
From President Bush, a plea to the public.
If you want to help support the Red Cross or the Salvation Army or your church or the United Way, please give cash money to organizations that are directly involved in helping save the lives that have been affected by Hurricane Katrina.
Some Americans are giving their personal time and space, giving part of their home to strangers. In Houston, CBS's Trish Regan with an inspiring example.
Taking stuff out and like fold it and stack it.
It's one thing to talk about helping the hurricane victims.
Oh, what'd you find?
But for Tracy Cox, talking wasn't enough. When she heard about the evacuees at the Astrodome, she headed straight there.
I mean, there was hundreds of people in the parking lot just digging through bags and taking anything you wanted to give them. They just wanted something clean, something to just have, because they had nothing.
It was there, in the parking lot, that she met Ann, Kiana, and Stephanie.
And they all had small children. And one of them's pregnant. She's 8 months pregnant. And I just couldn't send them back in there. I couldn't. Me and my husband just looked at each other and said, come home with us, all of you.
All 10 of them.
We just blend in like one big family, you know.
Overnight, this family of 6 became a family of 16, which is just fine by Tracy's youngest daughter, Everest.
It's really fun because I have someone to play with.
But Anne doesn't know what her own future holds.
What are you going to do next?
I have no idea, you know. I might just stay here with Tracy forever.
Tracy says they can all stay as long as they want.
CBS News correspondent Trish Regan in Houston. And yes, that was a white family welcoming a black family. The impact on all of us, even if we don't live on the Gulf Coast, we may well feel moved to be generous. That's great. The cutoff of some oil drilling and a lot of refining made our gasoline price skyrocket, and our sense of security may have taken a hit. A report from CBS's Thalia Assuris.
We go, baby, out here. They don't have no formula, no water, and they want us to survive out here. Where's FEMA? Where's the mail?
The cries of anguish and anger.
We are going to die out here if they do not see somebody out here right now.
The frustration and finger pointing.
The top officials of FEMA should be fired.
Underline the massive breakdowns responsible for the slow, stumbling response. State and local officials are pointing the finger at Washington and vice versa. But a former FEMA official says the entire system is broken.
This is a systemic problem that goes from the very top to the very bottom.
Jane Bullock says that part of the problem is that after September 11th, the Department of Homeland Security absorbed FEMA, diminishing its power and changing its priorities, and that no one at the top of either agency is up to the task.
At the federal level, unfortunately, we have leadership that has no experience in emergency management. And a disaster, even a small one, is a logistical nightmare.
Analysts point to a litany of additional problems, a federal focus on terrorism threats above all others, a lack of funds to maintain New Orleans levees, even the reticence and inability of some of its residents to evacuate when asked.
How much responsibility does the president bear here?
I think he ultimately bears responsibility for it.
Many wonder whether President Bush will demand top-level resignations. But perhaps the most looming question is whether the country is prepared for the next big one.
This is the biggest disaster we've seen in our history, but it's nothing compared to what a nuclear weapon would be, or a large-scale radiological attack, or a large-scale chemical attack on a city. So 4 years after 9/11, are we better prepared?
CBS News Homeland Security Consultant Randy Larson ending that report by Thalia Assuris. And that ends this special edition of the CBS World News Roundup, Katrina, a National Disaster. Our executive producer, Howard Arenstein. I'm Dan Revive, CBS News.